a totally different version, mind you.
Well, it's like, I always in my nightmare with these two.
Can I just say, this doesn't happen on News at 10.
You don't see the, make sure that's running there.
In terms of rewinding that, so we were talking about the issues that we identified, how confident we were at the start in terms of the and you were fairly confident, but that 60% was your way. You were 60%.
Yeah, 60% confident that we'd hit the targets. The way the targets are generated is pretty nebulous, because you stick a finger in the air and you say you're going to support X number of organisations, Y number of students, and therefore going to spin out of it. But it's not cast in stone. Yeah. But all of a sudden, then you measure it against these fictitious numbers.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. And you'd had positive feedback in terms of repairing the bid.
Yeah.
But you were aware that was, it wasn't going to be quite as easy.
Yeah,
as
you're always wary, you know. There were a couple of organisations, or quite a few organisations, that I contacted. I managed to get a European health and safety manager on board. I used him to vet modules that we put together. But even then, you're aware of the fact that it just needs somebody somewhere to say we're going to cut the L&D budget, or there's going to be a change of focus, and all of a sudden you've lost, you know, a high number of students before they've even enrolled. So I'm wary when organisations say yes, it's the next best thing to sliced bread. Mm. You know, you can only go with a hunch that yes, you're proposing is actually going to deliver a benefit.
Yeah. So in terms of those known issues at the start, and you said sort of there's an issue about getting the right staff.
Yeah.
And the issue about, you know, sort of the recruitment numbers, and that broadly you'd say the staff wasn't an issue.
Well, once we got the right lecturer in post, then I felt a lot more comfortable that we would be able to make a difference. What's critical when you're appointing staff is not only their skills and ability, but also the contacts they bring with them. Mm. From the mentoring project, it's pretty apparent that cold calling yields a very, very low number of potential students. It's who you know within the organisation. It's getting into the organisation. That's the trick. And if you do nothing else, you have to make sure that everyone who is aligned with the project leverages their contacts within the organisations to maximise the number of students. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. Okay. So those are the things we knew about at the start. Then you've talked about that. So were there any other issues that cropped up that were unexpected in the course of the project?
With that particular project. Yeah, I think once we realised that we were not hitting target and we needed a push, then I think it was at that point that it was a case of all hands to the pump. Mm. Even if your role wasn't in business engagement, my expectation was that you engaged with businesses. Mm. There's no point sitting there being an admin person if you've got nothing to administer, because you haven't got the recruitment. Mm. You need to think to yourself, well, you know, who do I know? What can I do? Mm. How can I benefit the project? And I was very, very fortunate with all the staff. Like, I can think of an example with the admin person writing modules on sustainability. You know, that was not part of her job role. That was not part of what was expected of her. But that helped us to have a wider portfolio available. Also, the main business engagement individual, if I remember correctly, I can't remember who this person was, wrote some modules on stress and stress management. Mm. You know, that all added to the portfolio. Mm. It may not have meant that we actually enrolled students on those modules, but it meant that you had things in the shop window that were credible and allowed people to consider that we were able to deliver a wide spectrum of material rather than just a small section. The other thing that really sort of swung things, I guess, was that initially the modules that were written were my best guess and the main lecturer's best guess at what people wanted.
Mm.
The reality was going in and talking to people and then writing the modules yielded the best results.
Mm.
Asking them what they want and then giving it to them rather than saying you need a good dose of this. Mm. And in reality, that wasn't what they needed.
And was that need to develop stuff with them? Did that come as a surprise, or were you sort of half expecting that you might need to do that?
I think there was a strong element of realizing that was going to be the case.
Yeah.
Purely looking back at my own experience in industry, it's seldom that you get a program off the shelf that actually delivers everything that you need within the organisation. And so having the ability to influence what the content is a real winner as far as the organisation is concerned. And therefore, it's really a key element that the institution needs to take on board.
Yeah, great. Okay. So, and then, what was the single biggest challenge that the project faced?
Single biggest challenge. It has to be recruitment. It always is. When you start, you start the project. There's a lag between the job offers to the staff, bringing people in. Setting up the team, making sure the team is functioning well, making sure that you as an academic manager, your focus is on the well-being of the team. Because if the team aren't firing on all cylinders, then the likelihood of you being having a successful project is pretty slim. So we did have an instance where a member of staff went on long-term sick, and that had an impact on the role that individual was fulfilling, and ended up with one or two individuals who were temporary or were surplus from other areas, and therefore did cut across the team a little. But I think in the main, the team itself gelled very, very well, and we were all of the understanding that we worked together to meet the aims. It wasn't purely down to myself or the business engagement officer or the admin person or the lecturer to deliver design, to engage. It was a team effort. It wasn't done to one person. I think that's my take on it.
Okay. And did the project meet its target?
I can't remember. I'd have to ask the project officer.
Yes, we did.
I thought we did.
We smashed them. We overachieved.
We overachieved. That's really, I can't take any credit for that. I think that's down to the team itself. We had a bit of good luck, in that we were able to develop modules that were needed and that met the needs of the organisations, and that was purely through discussion. And then it's sort of success breeds success, because once you've got people switched on to the fact that you've got big names signed up to a particular program or a module or whatever it may be, then it's a case of, well, if they are doing it, then we should be doing it.
Yeah.
So, it is a case of, having a couple of successful organisations under your belt, and then once you've got that, and you're publicising that, and you can develop case studies, even if they're not written down, you've got verbal case studies of the benefits that your programme has delivered to an organisation, then that really helps in selling the project.
Mm. I mean, I suppose, I don't know, it would have been possible to have done everything right and still not achieve the target.
I think that luck, if you like,
or
it is, but it's, I'm going to say, yes, it's luck, but there again, it's contrived luck, because if I had approached the project and said, right then, I am the wise person here, I know exactly what these organisations want, I will write the project, the modules rather, around what they want, and then sit back and wonder why nobody's signing up for them, then, you know, that wouldn't have been a surprise. The wisdom comes in saying, well, actually, what we need to do is talk to people, find out what we can do to help them, design the modules around that, go back in a number of iterations, and then, yes, you get that bit of luck in signing people up. Is that luck? I don't know.
Well, I suppose you could say we made our own luck. In a sense.
Well, yeah, I think that's...
Yeah, getting in the right place, and then they turned up. But I suppose, you know, there's that danger with that. You know, if you feel, you know, if you build it, they'll come. As an attitude that we can do all the work on the building, but in the end, you know, in the end, we can't.
We can't force people to sign up onto. They've got to want to do it, and the way you'll get that is to involve them in the development of the modules, and being able to share your vision as to the benefits it can bring, and get the organisations to buy into that vision. That actually, you know, we can improve our lot by investing in our people.
Okay, so there's a couple of sort of questions about process now, about sort of lessons learned, you know, sort of Prince 2 terms or whatever, any terms. First question is sort of how were lessons learned during the project, sort of what processes were in place to identify things that were working or not working? Or
I think once we got to the point that we could see we were falling behind with recruitment, then... At that point, I don't know if it was a conscious effort or if it just morphed into hands, you know, all hands to the pump. It's, okay, who do we know in organisations? And that's where serious leverage of contacts. It's a difficult thing sometimes if you've worked for an organisation to then go back into it and try and persuade them to sign people up or to help with developing modules or pathways of study or whatever, because it's a test of your own credibility in an organisation that you've now left. And it could be that you felt that while you worked there everything was hunky-dory, but in reality people only tolerated you. And then when you go back in, they say, well, we're going to touch that idiot with a barge pole. So it's a difficult thing to do, and I can understand why individuals maybe don't like doing it, but you've got to put yourself out there and you know, take the knocks if need be. And we were fortunate in that the lecturer and I guess myself had the credibility within organisations to be able to go in and talk to them and recruit them. And I think that's where, you know, the lessons learned for me has to be in the recruitment side, where you need individuals who have gravitas, who have credibility, who can talk the lingo, can, yes, recount experiences that they've had which are relevant to the organisation itself. I think that's the important part, and it's getting to that point within the project where you realise that you need to do something different. You know, it's the usual thing, you know, if you keep on doing the same thing, expect a different result, then it's the sign of madness. And I can't remember who said it, it was Einstein or probably somebody.
He didn't, but he
probably quoted it.
He's attributed to him,
So
in a way, what you're implying there is that you were, if you like, reflecting as you were going along, in terms of, you know, in terms of lessons learned, that you were sort of... actively being aware of, well, is this working or not? And then you reached a point where you recognised that significant change in practice was needed.
And that comes from measuring. You know, as I said at the outset, what gets measured gets done. And if you don't know how you're performing against your profile, you you can't then react when things go down the Swanee. You can be going along thinking, oh, well, yeah, we're there or thereabouts or whatever, but in reality you miss the change point that, hold on, we need to do something differently. Now I may have got my projects mixed up, but I'm sure we, at one point, maybe with the mentoring one, we got to a point of using telephone canvassing and paying money to that.
We didn't pay for externals telephone canvassing with Susu. We did a variety of innovative and attempts to contact companies directly in different ways, which are all in response to recognising that, as you say, the more conventional broadcast type marketing was just not getting anywhere
near. It's doing things differently to try and get, to get interest. And once you've got the interest, then you can get in and sell. Yeah. I think, the lessons learned from that perspective is that in reality, from a business engagement point of view, you need staff who are able to sell, who, as I've already mentioned, have got gravitas, who can talk the lingo, who can recount experiences, but selling is a really difficult thing to do. And what I've done with the current project of trying to use insights to make people understand it. If they do nothing else, it's understanding that building rapport and connecting with people is one of the tools that you need in order to sell to them. You need to be able to build that rapport with people, right? Yeah. I don't know whether that's been successful or not, but it's certainly an approach which, in my view, would help when it comes to selling.
Yeah. Okay. So in terms of the lessons I'm saying, there was that sort of conscious review as we were going along.
Yeah, yeah.
And then at the end, in terms of when we got to project closure, there was a lessons learned exercise to feed into the project closure report.
I'll be honest, I can't recall was that exercise that we went through, it was documented, obviously, but then was that shared with the next project that came along, and did it influence the way that project was set up and the way that project was run? The fact that I'm not clear on that makes me think that it didn't happen.
Well,
the
answer is, it was included in the project closure report, and therefore it was implicitly taken forward into planning future projects, I think. Whether it had any influence on institutional practice, I think one of the issues with that process was that because we were so close to the issues, that we were very the lessons we identified were very narrow.
Right.
They were very specific to that particular experience.
So rather than being general issues,
the implicit question was. The implicit question we answered was, if we ran this project again today, what would we do differently?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is it has some value, but it's a different question to saying, on the basis of your experience, what does the institution need to learn? Which might be a more helpful question in terms of the institution developing its practices, because it's not going to run the same project again, so therefore,
that's true, and there are things, as I mentioned at the top end, I didn't feel that the project was being monitored by the institution. It was certainly being monitored by PMU, but not by Trinity St David's, and that lack of pressure, I guess. There wasn't any pressure as such coming from the university. Maybe, had there been pressure, things would have happened quicker. I don't know. But I think what you have to do is, it's the same with any project, you review your progress, and if things aren't working out, then you need to brainstorm what needs to change. Mm. You know, and then do it, and then try it. Mm. And if it still isn't performing, you go back through the loop again and say, right then, okay, that didn't work, what else can we do?
So we've answered the question really about how those lessons learned have informed future practice, in that they have a bit, or in the narrow sense of being feeding into the development of future projects, but they haven't made any great impact to the wider institution.
I'd agree. The institute itself probably hasn't learned that it needs to monitor these projects and have feedback on a regular basis. The only time they really get involved is when things go awry and all of a sudden the university's at risk, financially, I mean. and at that point then, in some respects, it could be too late.
So it hasn't acknowledged the risk that it's... It has assumed that a project will run itself. And come back and tell us when it's finished.
The assumption is there that the project will meet all its targets, will do what's required. The targets themselves are based on finger in the air and assumptions and feedback from potential customers which may not materialise, etc. But the university seems to think that once the money's been agreed and whoever's funding it has said, yeah, you can do it, that because we've put the bid together, that, you know, everything is fine. And in reality, it's all based on sand, isn't it?
And I think I would say that there's a moment you get early on in a project when you're starting to implement it, where you suddenly realise that the assumptions that were built into the logic of the project might be incorrect. Mm. And that crunch period, or that sort of, you know, the reality check, I suppose you could call it, it is a natural part of the process, but it is one in which the institution ought to be paying attention.
Yeah.
Because it's, as you say, it's signed off on it on the basis of the future plan. That, you know, there's a scope maybe there for to say, well, like 3 months into the project, you then have some sort of formal process where you say, okay, well, do we still think this is going to run according to plan? Or not?
Yeah,
because that seems to be, you know, sort of that immediate thing where you say, is the marketing having the desired effect? Have we got the staff we need in place? Are all the assumptions, say the assumptions we've made, which need to make it work, are they actually going to be held true?
There are elements within the project setup which, from the outset, don't lend themselves to the success of the project. As an example, would be the salary offered for a business engagement officer. If you are after, you know, that's a critical role, and if you're after people who've got a little black book full of contacts and have the credibility and the gravitas, etc., then you've got to pay for it.
Yeah.
You know, and sadly, the university doesn't see that as being a critical role. In my humble opinion, I may be wrong, but
I suppose that there's think about projects within the university environment. I mean, one of the issues would be in terms of looking at the grading of post, grading of roles, that traditionally, you know, the university has had a very clear hierarchy in terms of what is considered to be important and well paid, and what, you know, and what isn't, you know. And that I can see it would be difficult to frame a, if you like, the sort of high level strategic business engagement type activity person, it'd be difficult to frame that role in a way that would become graded at the level that would be needed.
I can see that. But if the university is going to continue to bid for money to run projects, then that's an issue that they need to address, because you don't attract the right people if the salary isn't commensurate with what you're looking for.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was just thinking through that it's it seems to be an anomaly specific to universities, I would say, that elsewhere, doing project work, doing business engagement work, is there's a range of levels that are recognised, and that there's no sort of implicit sort of value to say, oh well, that's not the sort of work you pay people a lot for.
Yeah.
For the right individual, you're prepared to be flexible.
You know, when you boil it down, the business engagement person is a salesperson, and within any organisation, people who work within sales, if they're good at their job, they get paid exceptionally well, because they bring in the business for the organisation.
Yeah.
And if you look at it in a commercial, with a commercial head on, then the business engagement officers are those that bring in, are the individuals who bring in the students.
Yeah.
Simple as
that. Yeah, yeah. I think traditionally, the role has been seen as essentially an administrative role of sending out prospectuses, perhaps, or whatever. Not that it's not work, but it's in terms of its sort of skill set and requirements that it's it hasn't captured quite how demanding that might be.
Yeah.
And what your success criteria might be in terms of people doing it.
I got to say, anybody who's in that role, they have to be, not only have the contacts and the ability and the skills, what have you, they also have to be pretty robust as well, because the number of rejections you get is very, very high, and therefore you need to be able to take rejections and then move on, dust it down and move on. But it's the, what was that character on TV? Some Will, Someone, So What? Next. Mm. I can't remember the guy's name. I was in the call centre, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It was a bit unfortunate. It was Some Will, Someone, So What? Next.
Yeah.
You've got to have that mindset where you can move on and not dwell on the fact that you've invested a lot of time and effort. Anyway, that's...
Great. Okay, so then thinking about sort of in terms of your specific role, you yourself and you in that role, what did you learn from your experience in delivering that project, and how has that influenced your professional practice afterwards?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. What did I learn? I think it's not. I can't say I learned it, because I was already aware of it, but it's the power of the team.
Mm.
I think that was probably reinforced rather than something that I'd learned, because I was already aware of
it.
And the importance of keeping track of where you are and being prepared to change your course if things aren't going well. These are all things that I've experienced previously, and perhaps what the project has done is just reinforced them. Really, I can't say I learned anything new. Other than, I suppose, comparing it with the previous project, what did I learn? It's the importance of involving the customer in designing what you're delivering. That has to be the biggest lesson from it. And that's been carried through, from my perspective, in my practice, in the work that I've been doing with coastal housing. In that it started with a conversation, then talking to them, developing something, taking it back, you know, does this meet the bill? No, okay, right. And then going through those iterations until we finally end up with, in their case, a pathway which is going to make a devil of a difference to the skills of employees within social housing across South Wales, not only in with coastal housing, but also with other organisations as well.
So would you say that you now are willing to allocate a significant amount of your time to that sort of conversation?
Yeah, I think
in the past you might have sort of as a tick box exercise said, well, somebody needs to say they want this, but now you would say, well, actually, that developing, you know, that you're in terms of what you're doing, that you're consciously putting the time into.
I think it has to be really the way forward, certainly for ourselves within Wibble. Just as an example, on it was Tuesday afternoon, I was having a discussion with an organisation that has a really good idea but doesn't have high student numbers in mind at the moment. But I'm looking at it and thinking, well, if we get this off the ground, then I think it's such a good idea. I could see it having benefits with other organisations. I'm prepared at this point to put the time in, just to explore what the options are. And if it turns out that it's a non-starter, it's a non-starter. But, you know, we've got a couple of other organisations who say they want something. I'll invest the time and effort to get the ball rolling. If it turns out that it's a false dawn and they don't want to progress further, then fine. I think for every organisation I talk to, say for every 10, maybe we'll get 2 if we're lucky.
Yeah.
But that then can snowball. You know, and that's the great thing about it, I guess.
Okay. So and then sort of, what did you find most challenging personally about the project? What kept you awake at night?
Nothing keeps me awake at night.
All right.
I'll be honest.
Fair enough.
Nothing to do with work again.
What was the thing that you were sort of worried about?
I'm being flippant when I say nothing keeps me awake. I think what's concerning is that when you're not hitting targets, then you're dealing with your team's mortgages, their home life, their income, the whole shooting match. And so for me, it's the importance is making sure you do everything that you can to make sure the project is a success, because so many people, families are involved with income generated from that project. So you need to, you know, I think that's the most worrying side of any project. Like if people's jobs are on the line, if the project doesn't succeed, then, you know, you don't want to be going down the route of having to say goodbye to people when things aren't going well.
Yeah. So did you feel that as a weight of responsibility?
Periodically, I would say. I think when it was, I can't remember where we were in the project, but it was probably midpoint and we were behind target and everything. And they're thinking, if I was a selfish individual, I could say, well, I don't care, and just carry on and not change anything. And I'm all right, Jack, because I'm a full-time employee. But I could never think that way. And therefore, that was one of the, not the only, but one of the catalysts for changing tack and saying, right, then what do we need to do differently in order to hit these targets? I think it's part of a load of things, but it is there. It's sort of niggling at the back of your mind that if things go belly up, then there are people who are going to suffer financially because of it.
So in terms of, I suppose I've got a question about sort of emotional labour, which is this question. Were there times when you had to present a public face that was out of sync with what you were actually feeling? Were there times when you're, you know, that you might have it might have had to be more positive than you actually felt, or
I think you get to that point where you feel that you need to perhaps get more involved in things, and the reason that you give for becoming more involved with things are not the genuine reasons. The genuine reasons are that you're concerned that the project isn't being successful, and therefore you're rolling your sleeves up and getting involved as well. But what you could be telling your team is something totally different.
Yeah,
you know, it could be that you could tell the team that you've been told to do it, or I can't remember.
Yeah,
you know, an instance or a specific instance, but there were certainly times when I was getting a bit concerned, so I'd end up stuffing up envelopes or whatever it was, just to get a feel for what's going on and making sure that you know, everyone is pulling their weight, I guess.
Yeah, because I suppose that's you don't necessarily want to advertise that you consider that you're at a crisis point. You may just want to say, help is needed, here's some help.
Yeah.
That it's not helpful in those circumstances necessarily to say, this is actually, that there is a real concern here that this is not going to deliver.
Well, when you're in the role of managing a project or managing a team, managing an area, whatever it may be, then there are responsibilities that you carry. And I've been in the position previously where I've known that people are going to be made redundant, and then I get one of those very people coming on to me and saying that they're going to take out a new mortgage. So, you know, you then have the dilemma of being sworn to secrecy from one aspect, and then the pastoral care of the people that have worked for you. So, there can be conflict within your own mind as to how you address the situation. And yes, you end up, in that case, I just strongly suggested through anecdotal evidence that he might want to consider making sure that his mortgage was insured. And thankfully he did, and thankfully he thanked me afterwards. Yeah. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you can... get involved in something under the premise of one thing, but the reality is you're trying to make sure that the project or the area, whatever, is being maintained.
But in a way, it sounds as if you would see that as a continuum of standard management. You know, that's something that comes with the management role rather than something specific to projects. So would you see that, or would you say that it's particularly heightened in projects?
I'd see it as part and parcel of being a manager.
Yes.
And I think that's for people who haven't been a manager, who then find themselves in a role of managing projects, maybe they don't, or they're not aware of, and perhaps don't sign up to. But, that's what comes from experience and your own background, where if you've been in that position of responsibility, then you know what's expected of you by the organisation, and you live to that standard, I guess.
Yeah. So it's not. The issue around sort of monitoring targets and so on, that's not so much of an issue. It's more the leading a team. That's where the work is, if you like.
I've been pulling a great deal on my own experience where I've run projects in a manufacturing environment. Yes, you monitor progress. Yes, you make sure you've got the numbers. You know exactly where you are. If not on a daily basis, certainly on a weekly basis, you react to any issues that come up. Part and parcel of it then is how you manage your team, how you motivate them, how you make sure that they themselves are developing so that you don't have to do everything. You can rely on your team to deliver what's needed, and that you have the confidence in them that if things aren't going correctly, that they let you know and they tell you, and there's that open discussion and open feedback. But also, as a manager, you have to trust the people that work for you. You know, and I'm sure the team for the Susu project would not have been happy if I had been sitting on his shoulder, watching everything, asking loads and loads of questions, and being on the case, so to speak. Mm. I needed to be able to trust them, and I did trust them to get on with it. And I like to think that that approach was one that was of benefit to the project itself.
Yeah. Sure. Great.
Oh. Is that it?
Thank you very much. That's it. That's brilliant.
That's it.
That's great.
No. You can turn it on now.
Oh, yeah, no, that would have been embarrassing if I'd done it with Annie and.